and welcome to Tokelore.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Kiki.
Get stoned with us as we discover what folklore is and where to find it.
And as we learn about ancient and contemporary cultures.
All while imbibing in local cannabis. Today, we have a special guest.
At Sarah's behest.
Yes. I like to introduce my friend and poet.
If you'd like to know it, my name is Joy LaFleur.
Let your voice be heard
on Tokelore. Before we dive in, because I'm really ready to just sort of peel back your layers. and once we go that route, there's no coming back. So we should talk about what we're smoking today.
Yeah, we have a little bit of housekeeping.
Yeah, so we're trying to be more deliberate about this, too. Just be like, hey.
Oh, yeah, I should probably take a picture of my shoulder.
Educating ourselves. We're smoking here today. We have a few different joints, pre-rolls today. Because we're all trying to be safe and not sharing a pipe. And I can't read things with my glasses because I need bifocals. Okay, I'm smoking. This is from Sun God Medicinals. And it's called Citrus and Spice. And it is, where does it say? Flower is Morning Star. Crystals by Durban Poison. Interesting.
And how much THC has, is in that?
Oh, total THC, 159 milligrams. It's 1.2 grams. It's a big fatty. I'm only about halfway through it.
How much CBD?
I don't know if they had that breakdown on there. None. Or it's such a low quality that it's not, they can't really quantify it. How too many point zeros.
So is it, so from 1 to 5, is it sweet?
No, it's definitely citrusy though.
1 to 5, is it floral?
Mildly, yes. So I give that a 2.
How spicy?
Probably a 4. I'd give it a 4. It's definitely got some spice to it.
How about herbal?
2, maybe. I mean, herbal and floral in my brain are very, very similar.
How about woodsy? Is it woodsy at all?
No, I don't think so. I think it really was very on point with the name of it, Citrus and Spice.
Sour then?
A little bit of sour, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have the same sweet floral after that I get when I have the Barberries. Granted, those have a lot more herbal in them than this does, but...
How you feeling? You feeling peaceful?
Yeah.
1 to 5.
3. Do we have to do this for all of them or just for mine?
Yours.
Okay, good.
How about sleepy?
I'm like, that's going to put me to sleep.
I can do my own.
I feel like I'm filling out a quick. Do you have time for a quick questionnaire?
I told you it's housekeeping.
I know. Okay. I'm feeling chill and chatty. Does that answer your questions? I'm not sleepy.
It asked that twice, which is annoying.
Because it's a stoner that edited it.
Hungry.
Nah.
No. Uplifted. Yeah. Creative. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. You definitely live in the future. That's like a Weight Watchers fucking diet tracker.
For your weed. More or less.
Yeah. Time to feel effects.
Oh,
yeah, that
was
like 5 minutes.
I mean,
that isn't even legible. What did that say? That was like a gene or something. I don't even know. Wow. I should probably stop housekeeping now.
Yep. But don't we want to, you can at least tell our listeners what you're smoking.
What am I smoking? I'm smoking White the Wolf. Same thing Jorah is smoking.
Mm. It's like white truffle.
Or... White truffle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's got 24.6% THC. Is this one sativa or?
It's a sativa hybrid, I think.
Something, something.
No, I don't know. I didn't read it very closely.
But I love that it says the terpenes. I do enjoy that. Limonene, caryophyllene, and humulene. So that's nice.
I tried to smoke car sex, but it was wound too tight.
We made quite a lot of parallels to that earlier. I'll make sure that I add them in here.
Yeah. It promised me I was going to giggle, exhilarate, chill, but all I did was suck really hard with no result.
It's really disappointing.
Yeah, I would say, yeah.
It made her a little lightheaded and not from the weed.
Moved on. Oh, white shuffles are classy.
Yeah. And you got it from Moss Crossing, right?
Yep.
Moss Crossing.
Thanks, Moss Crossing.
All right. You ready?
I am.
Okay.
Also, I think the first question. Oh, do you already put it in there? Oh. So.
That, wait.
Mm-hmm. You're on just the introduction, yeah? Okay, Here we are, Jorah.
Hey.
So, this is a moment for you to just give people a chance to know who you are. Mm. If you want to share us a little bit about what you're doing right now with your life, or you could tell us a story, whatever you... Yeah. Let us know a little about you and your lore.
The Laura de Jorah.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, should have been a dad. I can tell you I'm not a dad, nor do I have any kiddos. But I do get to work with youth who, I hope none of them listen to this podcast where I smoke a bunch of weed. I get to work with young people around the art of spoken word. And one of the things that I often share with them that seems relevant here is my excitement about the idea that spoken word poetry is an art form that connects across all of human history as I understand it, right? So in this pretty broad, generic way, you know, my understanding is that all cultures around the world throughout time have had spoken traditions for the transmitting of identity, important information. But when you think about that, especially pre-writing, it's like the elements that I understand make for good performance, I'm like, must have been employed in their own specific iterations because that's how you make it Velcro in people's minds, right? So I just always kind of have this assumption, and of course, with some knowledge, if you look at bards or, you know, storytellers who are holding important positions in a tribe or nation, it's like, clearly, to be able to wield words in a way that really stuck with people and to have tactics and techniques around that is something that humans have been working with for like a very, very long time. So I think when you practice spoken word poetry in a modern form, part of why it's so powerful is because, like, I think it just like hits some human, you know, like deep human thing.
Evolutionarily. And, like,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's been, I think, ingrained so much in cultures recorded as far back as we have writings to record it, which is interesting because the implications, too, that you find from those recordings is that long before the recordings, it was obvious that this was a tradition handed down from generation to generation to generation and had a very steeped history and practice and lore for how it evolved for those people in each specific place. I love how deeply rooted that is, because so much about our brains right now are dealing with backlash from where we are in the tech industry. I mean, right now we are evolutionary. We aren't able to keep up. That's just why our brains are developing regularly things like ADHD, where we're getting to a point where the realization is this isn't a disorder. This is actually an evolutionary trait that we are seeing more and more frequently because that is how our brains are evolving to catch up with the shit we're doing to ourselves. And I feel like, the poetry, because of how deep it's rooted and has the ability to continue to be practiced and reinforced. Mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere.
It's sticky stuff.
It ain't a fad.
No, yeah. And it's definitely, I don't know, I guess to, I don't know why for myself I've always been so attracted to performance poetry as a form. It's just one of those things that was in my way of being from like a young age. And it wasn't because I had like a certain teacher. It wasn't something in my family of origin. It was just like always kind of in me to want to write poetically. And then even by the time I was a teenager, to want to read it and to be sort of fascinated by how the way that you wield the words affects the meaning, affects the connection. Like, it's that part has always been just as exciting to me as the words themselves.
It's fun to play with words in that way, to play with their context in different ways. Like, that's just a lot of fun. Like puns.
Mm-hmm.
Dad jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know. I am definitely kind of like a 4-year-old golden retriever. So I'm very aware that tone is a real thing, right? Mm. You'd be like, buddy, we gotta go to the vet. Get your nuts cut off, you know, like, but if it's said like that, like, you know,
you can't help but be excited.
Like, right? It's like, how important are words really, right?
Very,
it's like,
apparently.
I always kinda, yeah, I mean, yes and no, right? It's just like, I could say something so wonderful in a mean, angry tone, and your heart would probably still not love it.
Yeah.
But even yeah, that mm-hmm. can be a choice for a stylistic implication mm-hmm. or what you're trying to communicate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Purposeful juxtaposition is really interesting. Mm. And I think, you know, in my journey, the part that involved meeting you, Sarah, which is very exciting, was like when I got into doing, that was a really beautifully constructed sentence. Like, it was just really syntactically elegant. So, yeah. When we met inside of the theater world, I was at a point in my artist development where I was like just so excited to do some straight up actor training, because it was like, oh, I don't even have to think about writing the words. All I have to do is deal with someone else's words and then like mm-hmm. learn about how to make different choices. And I think that has then really filtered back into the way that I read poetry.
Do you do that much with other people's poetry when you read it?
I definitely
play around with those tones and intentions.
Yeah, I think having a little bit more experience with auditioning and cold reading and that kind of stuff really actually gave me a new comfort, interest, curiosity about how to read other people's work, because you can treat it like it's an audition. Like, oh, what could I do? You know?
Mm-hmm. Play with it.
Play with it. Yes. Mm-hmm. To try different things. And I think even just the idea that there should be choices made and that you don't have to adopt like one reading voice, like something that I you know, hear people do when they read their own work a lot too. And the more classically, like if you go to a more literary poetry reading, sometimes there's just beautiful words, but you have someone who is not a performer and they're just trying to share. And you watch, we just, you know, we all do things when we're nervous or we're uncertain. And what people do a lot with their own poetry is that then they have a poetry voice. And everything gets read in a certain kind of feeling. And people wonder why no one wants to go to poetry readings.
Yeah.
There's a reason why slams are a slam in good time.
Mm-hmm. Or a slam can go the other way. Mm-hmm. Sam was like, and then Rowdy. When I got my sandwich back and it was not the sandwich that I thought I had ordered, like,
oh my God,
that's like a whole other situation.
Wow. Keep kicking the table.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's a little aggressive though. That's like,
oh yeah, it's slam, baby.
Wow, your sandwich. That's some serious business.
I've seen some pretty epic poems and slams. When people have the performance of their piece down, they can be such magnetizing moments.
I don't know who it is that does that. I cannot remember her name, but she did. She's done at least two TED Talks where she performs her poetry. Like, and it's just like seamlessly. Just she's just start going into her slam. Like she's just lecturing and then, bam, she's okay.
Is performing. That Sarah Kay? By maybe. Chance? Is that If I Should Have a Daughter?
Yes.
By Sarah Kay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's lovely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I've listened to some of Andrea Gibson's stuff. Very good as well. Oh, yeah. And a perspective that I'm like, yeah, I have no experience with that. So that's a very eye-opening format. Like, way to learn.
Highly confessional often. Mm-hmm. I think that world of spoken word and slam poetry in specific. And so there is that kind of really artsy vulnerability on a couple of levels, because it's always vulnerable to be in front of people. Mm-hmm. It's immediately vulnerable to be in front of people with no costume, no musical instrument, no characters, just you and your words.
So there's words.
They're your words. So there's an inherent vulnerability.
It's your baby you're exposing to the world.
And then if you like, you can add on to that telling a really personal story about something that happens. Yeah. Why not? Ooh. So I was like, just go all in.
There's, I think, a reason why that ends up being so impactful to people then, because vulnerability attracts us to things. Like, it's surprising.
Yeah, well, we all want to not feel alone, and we all feel insecure, I think, in the biggest sense of the word. We all have some small or large area where we're wrestling with feeling safe and solid and sure, and so, you know, to just feel less alone in whatever small or big way never seems to not be, I don't know, one of those.
It always
really
attracts
moving
people.
Experiences.
Yeah, no, it's very attractive. And I think that's definitely evolution. I mean, there's something about the safety and security and knowing you aren't alone in the world. Yeah. Yeah.
Belonging.
Connections. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not everyone who's listening's ever been to a poetry slam. And a lot of people probably have some sort of like stereotypical idealization of what it might be. So I would love it if you could give us a quick sort of rundown of what it was like when you were emceeing the Eugene Poetry Slams at Tsunami Bookstore. It was some pretty amazing stuff that you did there for many years. So. And it was cool to see the lives touched by that existence. So,
it was. Okay. Well, I think one of the things that I always like to do is kind of just do a little terminology clarification. So spoken word poetry is the form. And then if you take, which can also be called performance poetry. And then slam is a competition. It's a competition for spoken word poetry. At least as far as I understand it, it was started in the 80s in Chicago and has evolved and become a national thing with slam competitions happening all over the country and the world. And so really it's like slam poetry is actually really just poetry, spoken word poetry, performance poetry, performed at a slam, at one of these like sporting events. And so I think it has come to kind of be this larger, looser term where people will say slam poetry just to denote the kind of sort of big performance type poetry that people do at a slam and that slam has like fostered and helped give rise to. But yeah, it's actually just is a very specific event in which there are rules and judges and you bring some stakes into the room, I think is what it does. And there does seem to be a reason why it's like all these shows that have existed for so long, you know, now American Idol, The Voice, you know, all the ones, like it's, there's something about
they're
the
kind of built on a similar
structure that gets people who are not performing really invested and involved. So that was what I saw with the Poetry Slam in terms of kind of the container that it created was on the poet side, on the performer side, the stakes kind of serve to, like, I think bring people with a little bit more polish and thought, and you're taking a bigger risk than if you just went to an open mic. So there's an energy to that, right? There's, like, in terms of the quality of performance that may happen. Now, on the audience side, they understand that they are not passive in the same way that I think sometimes happens in watcher-viewer art forms, right? Because there's judging, and the judges are just people from the audience. So it's like, first of all, you could sign up to be a judge, but then also if you didn't, you're still judging, and you're like judging the judges, right? Mm-hmm. So the whole audience really has an investment in if they agree with the scores or not. So there's like a hype mm-hmm. to it all around that I think is just unfortunately hard to achieve in just like, hey, come out to this beautiful spoken word event. It's going to be mm-hmm. just, you know, and so I say it's just personally, many people absolutely love slam. And I, of course, love things about it and respect what it does. I just, there's also this part where I think I'm an inherently not overly competitive person. And I also saw, you know, some of the saddest things that could ever happen is someone comes and they compete and they don't get good scores and they don't come back. I hated watching mm-hmm. that. I mean, that didn't happen a lot, but it could. And there is obviously something just kind of obviously ridiculous about having just people from an audience judge the quality of these people's art, like kind of messed up. Anyways, but that's not really what you asked me. I do like to like give the context of what a poetry slam is.
No, and you yeah. do that even mm-hmm. in your even mm-hmm. while you were emceeing, you took the time to, even if, you know, 90% of the people in the room had been there all season long, mm-hmm. you usually still had two or three new faces that didn't know mm-hmm. and like, that's a really valuable way of bringing them in. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you. It.
I appreciate that too. I don't know if I was the best slam host, but I did it. And runner, administrator, whatever I was, I did that thing for 13 years. It was a beautiful opportunity, I think, for a night of, yeah, the thing we were talking about earlier, straight up connection. For me, my formula for spoken word is like craft plus courage equals connection. So mm-hmm. it, you know, people are coming mm-hmm. at that from different, the algebra to me often would just check out. Of course, that's overly simplified, but it's like a person could come with very little craft experience, but so much courage. Like they're just getting up there, they're doing it, and they would really connect with the audience. And sometimes a piece would just be so well developed. The craft is so high. It's not taking as much courage now because that person like really owns it, right? It's not as mm-hmm. scary as the first couple times, mm-hmm. but the craft is really evolved and that'll really connect. Yeah, so some balance of those. All of that being said, let me try to get to the actual question about like kinds of poetry. So I feel like there is this idea of, you know, and I was just making fun of us, and I feel like I can make fun of spoken word poets or slam poets because I'm in group on that. Like I'm just making fun of me. Like something I love is when there is not just one obvious sound or theme or cadence, or, you know, it's like the more diverse the better. What I love about spoken word is it's such a blank slate. You know, you don't have to follow a beat like in hip hop. You don't have to follow a particular structure like maybe in a more literary form of poetry that you would choose. So it's so blank. You can just genuinely work on figuring out your own voice. And so I think that kind of like most stereotypical, like loud yelling, you know, slam poetry is like, you hear the words, you're like, slam, you know, in my experience, and of course mine is limited more into our community, but that's only a small fraction of that's only a piece of what's happening. And there are so many other effective ways to approach it. So really, to me, I'm like, bring the courage, bring the craft, make the connection. That's spoken word. If you do it at a slam competition, it's a slam poem.
There you go. Did that answer the question? I don't even know what the question was.
Oh, I was just curious about the actual structure of the sporting event.
Mm. Oh, she yeah. answered that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I think for me, coming from an overly competitive athletic background, it was a refreshing way to approach competition that made it feel less threatening. And because it was all about the community and supporting, and the fact that the audience was there to keep the judges honest, and that everyone was there to be respectful of everyone who was courageous enough to even do it. Mm. And so, at least in my experience, and which is much more limited, like even the poets with the most meh, they got mm-hmm. up there, and so people still cheer them on and still appreciated what they brought to the table and what they had to share. And You never walked away. I would feel like anyone mm-hmm. should be proud of themselves to have accomplished even just getting up there to do it, mm-hmm. regardless of how you score. But everyone's mm-hmm. different, the relationship with competition too. So mm-hmm. I could see how that can be a little off-putting mm-hmm. because not everyone knows how to balance it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've never been to a slam poetry competition, but I have done karaoke. And I think it is, I think it is similar. And that, like, yeah. you can get up there and you can sing off key the entire time, but mm-hmm. if you bring your performance, mm-hmm. if you like do air guitar and drum, and you if you just perform uh-huh. like the entire band, everybody's
they're there
with you. Yeah,
they are. Yeah, it's That's really. Fun. I mean, I think like being on stage to me is the focus is what you're making an offering, mm-hmm. right? You're not asking for attention. You're making an offering. Mm-hmm. So make it a honest, good offering. And, you know, that's like mm-hmm. all you can do.
Yeah.
It's like.
There are actual rules in karaoke. Like, I did this as a project in college for folklore research.
Ooh.
And I interviewed a bunch of my friends that I did karaoke with because I was going to karaoke like 3 times a week.
You were getting it.
Yeah.
And, well, there's quite a bit of it in college, especially. You used to do it all the time at
every week you could,
Taylor's.
Every day of the week you could find Taylor's. Karaoke somewhere.
But that is really good cake.
Yeah.
I cannot believe there's no egg, no dairy, no
It's gluten-free.
Wheat, no gluten.
Yeah, I think it's got some sort of flour in it. It's mm-hmm. definitely got a nice sponge.
It's very good.
Oh, man.
It's very deadly.
Chocolate orgasm cake wow. by Sweet Life.
It's weird. It's really good.
I feel like that cake could definitely inspire a poem.
You got one?
I mean,
is one being developed right now?
It is. That chocolate orgasm cake is giving birth to a poem in my mouth.
I was going to bring up one of my poems I wanted to share.
Aww.
I haven't written in ages. And last year in June, when Elena came to visit for her birthday, we went camping.
I can fill that mm-hmm. up
so we went
for
camping
you
out by Smith Rock. And there are some really brazen chipmunks and squirrels out there. Those fuckers will take anything that is not, like, tied down. Anyways, and Elena was trying to make a habit of writing a poem every day. Mm. Or at least taking the time to do that when doing new things so that she's, like, thinking about being present in the moment. Mm-hmm. So we both wrote poems about our squirrel relationship and one particular fat squirrel that kept coming in and trying to take things right in front of us. Like, he didn't give two fucks. He was like, yeah, I know I'm faster than you, so you could just deal. It's like, fuck. We named him Chad.
Oh.
Bro. We're just, yeah. It was,
bro.
Yeah. So, bro, not cool. And then eventually all the squirrels that came into camp were Chad, so it just we wrote poems about Chad. The chocolate orgasm cake is getting soft.
It's just, it's spent. You know, I'm just tired of holding yourself up.
Once you've filled so many happy mouths, it's okay to let go. Chocolate orgasm cake.
That was so beautiful.
Oh my.
Okay.
I feel like that's my cue to smoke more weed.
Do it.
Of course.
I think the element of surprise is a big part of how stories stick.
You remember the surprises.
Everyone likes a good twist, even when they're expecting them, because they know it's going to happen. They just
Fucking
don't know
Netflix.
What.
Mm-hmm. Fucking Netflix. They're so good at that.
Those twisty motherfuckers.
So... do you have a poem that you would like to perform for us today?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
You may need a little more of that. I don't know.
I'm going to need it to stop being on the journey with me again. Am I allowed to ask you guys questions?
Go for it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, if you want to smoke that a little more first, ask away.
So Sarah, you were just talking about writing. So you have some relationship to writing poetry. I'd love to hear more about that. And Kiki, do you write poetry?
Yep. I got one published.
Mm, neat.
It's really bad. So it was my goal. It was on my bucket list in high school to get a book published before I graduated. And my mom fully embraced this goal. And she pretty much paid for my terrible poetry to be self-published into a book.
Your teenage poetry.
Yes. And I was looking back at it and I was like, oh.
That is amazing. Oh.
Very strong imagery, but very fucking depressing.
Yes. Oh my God.
So much emotion as a teenager.
I was like reading through it. I was like, yes, you're onto something. You lost it. You lost it. Okay. That's where we went. Oh.
So. Okay. I feel like a lot of people, you know, get a lot of both insight and serious cringe out of looking back at their middle school or high school poems. There's actually like events that are just like embarrassing reading of your old journals, you know?
My mother, so in first grade, Mrs. Ames' class, Ruth Ames's mom was my first grade teacher. We got to meet her at Country Fair last week.
I did. Yes, I did.
She had us write poetry in the class. I'm pretty sure it was her class. And then we had to, like, write it out. We made these little Mother's Day gifts of our poetry for our mom. And they were, like, formulaed for us. So they were, like, little haikus and limericks and things like that that walk you through how to build the structures so that you learn the structure. Mm-hmm. And my mom kept it. I don't know how it ended up back in my possession, but I have it. I've gone back and read this stuff, and I'm just like, I was 8. Yeah. Where did I come up with some of this stuff? Ooh. And so sometimes I'm surprised by my word choices, and sometimes I'm just like, oh, you phoned that one in. It's really obvious. The cat sat on the hat, you know, that kind of. Not really going to try for anything complex. I'm just trying to fit the quota.
I love that you're looking at your 8-year-old self with that critical of an eye. Ah, you were really phoning it in on that one. What was it, recess?
It's really revealing to my personal self-image at that age. It's definitely, yeah.
I don't even, wow.
Okay, so, but that 17-year-old brat has a book of published poems. But that is, honestly, that is fucking amazing. Because, again, most people, it's like, myself included, you've got some old cringy journals, which are beautiful and actually very precious. But the idea that your mom, being wonderful and least supportive, obviously, I'm sure that was her intention, but like would be like, you know what you're going to want? You're going to want these poems from this era to be public. That's a great, that's a great friggin' story. I love it. Okay. I do have a poem that I've been stalling.
It's all good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, this is a poem that I thought would be appropriate for this episode, and I think it's going to be so obvious that I should say nothing more about it. Tell me a story. Tell me a story of greatness and glory. Tell me of your daily routine, mundane. Tell me of your triumph, your fury, your pain. Tell me who you play today in the epic of your life. Are you the Shadow Witch or the Shiny Knight? See, I want adventure, uncensored. No need for special effects. But the chords in your throat and the sound they project, best way to connect across the gulfs that divide us. Old as the hills, these stories inside us. Oral tradition, human condition. Tell me your story and I'll sit and listen. With eyes that glisten and a mind that reels. I want to know how you think. I want to know how you feel. So we live in the age of the digital page. No cry of the wolf, no voice of the sage. And I'm hungry for it. The substance, the juice, the mouthfuls of meaning. coming from tongues that let loose and run wild like a child with excitement and zest. Throw out your opening line and I'll follow the rest. Beyond idle chatter and words meant to flatter, tell me what lies at the heart of the matter and I'll be there, dedicated by your side. No need for shame, nothing to hide. We all have dark hours and hearts that get broken. No greater power than truth that is spoken. Through the myth of our lives, we struggle and strive, bound by our common will to survive. Plot universal, no dress rehearsal, love versus fear and the choices we make, the whispers we hear, the risks that we take. Same ancient evil on our longest nights. So tell me a story that affirms the light. Let us banish false fright like round the warmth of campfire with words to inspire. Beyond entertainment to depth of a soul, a hero is born as their story is told. Beyond entertainment to depth of a soul, a hero is born as their story is told. Tell me a story.
Is this when you snap?
Yeah. When you snap.
Where did that come from?
That poem.
No, the snapping. Oh, the but yes, the poem.
Mm-hmm. They're both questions I don't know how to answer. It's a good question. I don't know. I'm sure the internet would tell us the truth about the snapping. For me, I associate it a little bit with that kind of more beat generation style. The beat style poetry probably precedes that. Maybe it has something to do with jazz. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I know functionally, I feel like, how it serves in the poetry setting is that ability to if you're at a music concert and you're feeling it, you can be like, whoa, or you can clap. And it's like you can give love in that way. But with a poem, obviously, you don't want to interrupt them. So I think it's that ability to have a way to be like you hear a line you really love and you can snap like, oh, snap, while they're still doing the poem.
So that's where it's functionally.
Nice.
That's how I see it serve, but
yeah.
I'd like to know the origin too.
I'm sure that's something. There's what is usually folklore. It's somewhere in the middle, right?
Myth and story. Yeah, myth and real.
But yeah, where did that poem come from?
I don't always know where any of them come from, but it is an old poem, and I would say it was probably partly from being in a period of time where I had participated in writing and acting in a hip opera that was based on the Hero Sequence by Joseph Campbell. So I was definitely in story, I think in time.
Did we have another question?
I think that really well covers it. I do just love, part of the reason we've been trying to really find ways to help illustrate the breadth and depth of folklore around us, because so many people, since we've started doing this and have this conversation more regularly, people, we realize, have relegated folklore to just this dusty old thing. And it's like, actually, no, it's everywhere and everything. Yeah. And that's a sliver of it. You're missing out on so much more that's out there that can help you really appreciate things that you wouldn't necessarily get or understand.
Mm-hmm. So folklore would go so far as to ask, what is the purpose of your poetry?
It's redundant to some of our earlier conversation, but I think for me, at least, the performance of poetry has always been about connection.
Okay.
And I'd say in a multifaceted sense. So definitely just the connection that gets created in a room when one person performs and other people give the gift of their attention, it's like there's a genuine synergy that happens through that connection, because performers aren't performers without an audience, right? You're an artist, but you're not a performer until there's an audience happening at you. And an audience doesn't exist until there's a performer. The audience that's just a group of people in a room. So these things literally create each other. And in that dynamic of one person on stage making the offering and the people in the listening space offering their attention, in that exchange of offering, I just think is one of the coolest possible fields for connection that can happen. And so that's a big reason. But okay, the other layers of connection, I feel like there's this aspect of wanting to be honest with myself. So there is a connection between my inners and my outers, as in I'm going to take a bunch of inner thoughts and emotions and make them outer, which means I'm going to come into conversation with myself in another way and get connected to myself in a way that I think maybe doesn't happen as consciously or helpfully sometimes as it does when you're willing to like write about an experience on top of having it. So I think being in connection between the mind and the mouth and the heart is another piece. And then there's like this kind of more esoteric like connection to a higher power, or to, you know, a sense of muse, of maybe entities, if ideas and inspirations are, I don't mean entities like aliens, I mean like if ideas, no, get real, like, but like if, you know, the ideas that drop in, if moments of inspiration, like whatever life those things have, where it very much can feel that they arrive. Mm-hmm. That's a cool connection. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be open to whatever that is exciting. So, yeah, I think overall there's constantly, I come back to that. That's the best word for me when it comes to the why. It's about connection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's an oral tradition that it's an orally transmitted tradition that creates connection between a group of people.
Okay.
Right on. So that's it. That's a wrap. Mm-hmm. We can say goodnight. I'm happy to finish smoking the rest of my joint too, but
the pressure's off. Mine is a roach.
Oh, mine's almost a roach.
Well, I like the tokes and the lore. Aw. I think the tokes and the lore together. Where some things just work. Peanut butter, chocolate, fish, tartar, Toke's lore.
I mean, who doesn't sit around and chat forever after getting high with their friends?
This is true.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. Everybody should go buy your poetry book.
Oh, hey, is it still available online?
Hold on, there's information.
It is still available.
Where is it available from?
It is available through my website. My website is joralafleur.com. Try spelling that on your own. JORAHLAF, as in France, LEUR. .com, joralafleur.com. That's me.
Right on.
We'll put it in the show notes. Make sure people don't get it wrong.
Yeah. There you go.
They don't want to listen to me read it like an alphabet soup.
Oh, they'll get the alphabet soup too.
That's my PBS voice.
Yeah, you should do voiceover.
I am waiting for the call.